Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show. And as we tune in live right now, my San Diego Padres have just cut their deficit from 5-3 to 5-4 against the Milwaukee Brewers in the top of the eighth inning here on this lovely Thursday afternoon, May 27th. Welcome in everyone who is here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash or listening on YouTube Live later on. So thank you again to anyone and everyone who stops in. Of course, if you're listening on YouTube, follow and subscribe to Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. If you're listening on Open Talk, check out our YouTube. You can find it in our Instagram over at Comical Sports Memes and Take It Easy Podcast on Instagram. You can find all the different stuff that we're working on as well as this here Take Easy radio show. So what's up, everybody? I'm going to be watching this Padres game down towards the stretch here. Every now and then on a Thursday or a Wednesday, we get these baseball-esque talk shows. And you know what? The Padres might just have the perfect day for that today. As Eric Hosmer, who's 1-for-3 with a couple of RBIs so far today, steps up to the plate for those San Diego Padres. A few picks over by NL Rookie of the Year 2020, Devin Williams, who is trying to come in here in the eighth and do some work for the Milwaukee Brewers, who have one of the best bullpens in baseball. But after that, it is a precipitous drop-off in terms of the production from the bats for the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm looking at their lineup right now, and yeah, it's bad. It's real bad for the Milwaukee Brewers right now. As first pitch delivered to Hosmer is a strike, fake steal by Tatis, nothing in the books there. Their best hitter this year is Avisail Garcia, which is already tough because Avisail Garcia signed like a one-year contract with the Brewers, and he's hitting .252 with an OPS slightly below league average. So it has not been a good season for any of these Milwaukee Brewers bats or their starting pitching. So, yeah, it's not looking too hot for Milwaukee, but they've got a deep bullpen, so that's going to work in their favor down the stretch. Another pick over to Tatis. This is the point in baseball games that I don't really understand when they would start booing the other team and their decision to keep picking over and over again. For those on the YouTube, let me just grab my Padres jersey real quick. And for those on Open Talk, there's nothing changing here as the 0-1 pitch comes into Eric Hosmer. Love this Tatis jersey that I got working out there, wearing these jerseys, the brown and gold. Hosmer fouled the pitch off down the left field line. Now 0-2 on the count for Eric Hosmer, trying to rally the San Diego Padres. They're showing the replay of his home run off of whoever Richards is. I have no idea who Richards is for the Milwaukee Brewers, but he hit a homer off Richards. And Hosmer got that giant spinning chain. By the way, the Padres having a home run chain is just the best, man. The fact that this the turnover chain that began at the University of Miami that extended to all of these sports that I love so much, all these different variations of the turnover chain that are the greatest things ever, like Oregon State, the Beavers having the turnover chainsaw is like the greatest thing in the world. And the turnover pencil, that one was my favorite, where they just turned it, when they went full Travis Scott and just held up a pencil like SpongeBob and Doodle Bob, for those who are young enough to understand those references. So yeah, there's that. And then there's the now infatuating baseball is the turnover chains are now becoming a baseball thing. And I love it. I love it, love it, love it that baseball is now taking over the turnover chain, and that the Padres, my San Diego Padres, are the team that's doing that, as it's now 1-2 to Hosmer. He is down to, well, he just took a ball, and now here on a 1-2 count to Hosmer, hopefully he can get that chain back in there so he can start repping it after the game. I love that they're busted out the spitty chain now. Again, pick over the Tatis for the fourth time this at bat. Really want to make sure Tatis doesn't steal second and manufacture another run for the best team in Major League Baseball, the San Diego Padres, wearing the jersey that I have repped here on the Take It Easy radio show. We'll get to some NBA talk and maybe a little bit of NHL down the road here, but for now, we've got our talk show, game show, whatever you want to call it. I like to turn these into a game show. Another pick over on Tatis. That's number – there's no fans at the home ballpark to castigate. Yes, castigate is the word I was trying to say there. Castigate Devin Williams. I had to make sure it wasn't the other one that would be castrate, which is something very different. No one there to castigate Devin Williams into throwing a pitch or at the very least peer pressuring him, which, like I said, is a weird thing that baseball does. But yeah, my baseball team's got swag. My baseball team is cool. My baseball team is a national brand. And you know what? The Padres, the fact that I can piss on tradition and have a great baseball team, it's just everything in one as they deliver the 1-2 to Hosmer outside for ball number two. 2-2 is the count to Eric Hosmer. I love that I have a baseball team that just pisses on tradition. It is the greatest thing in the world to have this baseball team come in here and just take a piss on tradition and be young and be exciting and have a superstar that is like second in the league in jerseys and flips bats and pisses off the old people and gets on MLB The Show covers like it's the greatest thing in the world. As the 2-2 pitch almost gets away from Omar Navarez, still hanging around. Shout out to Narvi, which it looks like is his nickname according to his jersey plate on his catcher's gear, but shout out to Omar Navarez, still just hanging around in the major leagues. Same with Manny Pena, former postseason hero Manny Pena, who is still just hanging around catching for the Milwaukee Brewers, even though they had Yasmani Grandal, and now they don't have Yasmani Grandal. So, yeah, they could really have used Yasmani Grandal, considering Avisail Garcia is their best hitter below league average. They don't have a single batter in the lineup above league average in OPS. That's not true. Manny Pena is over 800 OPS as Tatis takes off on 3-2. Hosmer grounds one to the left side, foul. And so we'll do it again on the 3-2 hit and run. So, to recap, baseball team that pisses on tradition. A, San Diego Padres, fun team, best record in baseball. Talked last week about how they won nine. I think at the time we recorded this, they had won six straight games with the win streak, and then they lost two in a row here to the Brewers because, you know, regression to the mean, and Fernando Tatis hitting 3-for-12 in the series, which is .250. Like, it's better than league average at this point. I think the league average is hovering around, like, .235, .240. So better than league average in the series, but to go from 11-for-14 with four homers and four doubles and a 2,000 OPS is a little bit of a disappointment. Another pick over, number six of the at-bat for Devin Williams. So Tatis, you know, 3-for-12, not bad in the series, and Machado didn't play today, and he's actually on deck right now, now that I look at it. He's going to pinch hit for the pitcher's spot after Eric Hosmer in, like, a magic at-bat situation. Rare do we just have the guy that can just be pulled off the bench ready to pinch hit like our boy Manny Machado. So 3-2, Tatis takes off, Hosmer, again, foul ball. So this will be pitch number 8, and we've had the 6 pickovers. We've had the 1 at-bat. We're now if you want to talk about this from baseball and the idea that a ball gets hit in play every 4 minutes and 40-something seconds of real time in Major League Baseball, you can point to this fact right here. It's been the same batter for all 10 minutes that we've been on the air here on the Take It Easy radio show. When I was doing the introductions and the music, the Padres had a runner – or I'm sorry, the Fernando Tatis was just dropping a blooper into right field – or into left field to drive in a run to make it 5-4, and it's still the same batter. With now the 8th pitch and the 6th pickover, I totally understand why people don't like baseball. Tatis is going to take off again. Pitch from Devin Williams is driven up the middle. Base hit, Eric Hosmer. Tatis is going to keep on motoring over to third, where he finds himself on the corners. A big 2 single for Eric Hosmer has put the Padres with runners on third and first, 1 out, and Manny Machado, that bad man, is coming up to the plate for the San Diego Padres. Best record in baseball, San Diego Padres, who I will live and die and breathe for. It's one of the few teams where I've like held on to fandoms from childhood, because I talk about this with people all the time. Like, I have pretty much like the Chargers leaving kind of was my introduction to the sociology of fandom and why it is that we root for the teams that we root for. And Adam Lefko phrased this in simplistic terms, but ways that I'd never thought about it, is just if he had – he's an Eagles fan, and he's from Philadelphia. If he had been born in Texas, he probably would have been a Cowboys fan. If he had been born in Washington, he probably would have been a racial slurs fan. And if he had been born in New York City, he probably would have been a Giants fan. So fandoms are always fascinating in terms of who we root for and why we root for them. And it's a whole sociological experiment with sports. And so for me, growing up in San Diego and being 16 years old when the Chargers left San Diego, and, you know, being 6 years old when the I forgot the guy's name, but the interception that was a fumble that you have to Google, 2006 happened, 2007 with Phillip Rivers' torn ACL. I remember watching that game with my grandpa. And 2010 with the Jets, like, and all of these memories that come flooding back for the Chargers from their good days and, you know, winning the 6th seed, getting the 6th seed in the most improbable fashion and beating the Bengals in a playoff game and taking on the Broncos and all that stuff as ball one comes in to Manny Machado. And the sociology of fandom is super fascinating. And so I've given up a lot of my fandoms over the years. I've passed up being I stopped rooting for the Chargers, and it was one of the best decisions of my sports life, was to not root for a football team, because it allows me to talk about football without having to deal with the like crazy fandoms of subjectivity per se, as ball two goes way outside the Machado. That got away from Williams a little bit. And so, I mean, I'm a big Mahomes guy, of course, and in the NBA I have, you know, a LeBron jersey. I have a Kawhi Leonard t-shirt. He's my boy from San Diego State. And the reason we root for fandoms is different, because I recognize where I was born and the fandoms of my parents and grandparents shape a lot of the fandoms that I have in sports. It's why I love San Diego State football and basketball, for an example. Even though I don't attend the university, I just grew up going to the university and going to their games as Machado swings and misses at strike number 1, maybe would have been ball 3. It was a little up in the zone, but I think he might have gotten the call on it. They just wanted to make sure to pitch up and away from Machado on that 2-0. And so the fandoms that I'm talking about when it comes to, like, rooting for the Aztecs or rooting for the Lakers or the Chargers, a lot of that has to do with location and growing up in Southern California. And the Padres are the team that I've just still connected to, even through terrible seasons and having the worst record of the last 40 years in baseball, as Machado lines one into right center field, and it's going to roll all the way to the wall, which means Hosmer is going to come in, because this is a slow roller. JBJ fishes it out. Hosmer rounding for the plate. He's going to score. No, he's out. Oh. The relay had him. Goodness, I have no idea how they got that relay in there fast enough with the ball rolling slowly to the wall. Oh, That hurts. Padres tied the game, but the liner to the wall. Machado, slow roller. Hosmer had to wait, but it rolled so slowly. JBJ took a bad angle at the ball, and relay, perfect. Willie Adames, recently acquired by the Brewers, perfect relay. Hosmer had no chance. Oh, perfect relay. Swipe tag, just nicked him before he could get his hand down. That is a tough break for the Padres. They were so close. Willie Adames, I made the joke last year he would end up on the Orioles. It was a close equivalent. He ended up getting traded to the Brewers, and they just moved Joey Wendell to shortstop, and their stud prospect, Wander Franco, who's going to be the shortstop of the future for that team, is going to come up sooner or later. But I knew Willie Adames was going to get traded after that World Series run, even though he was a beloved, beloved Tampa Bay Ray. It just felt like an inevitability at some point there. Well, that's a one way to kill a rally, is with an out like that. But here's Victor Caratini stepping up to the plate now as ball one comes into Caratini inside. Ryan Weathers got the start today. All right. Wow. Isn't that baseball? The baseball talk show is now the game gets to be the star of the show, but now we can circle back to my point here with about two outs left. And it's a perfect case because you got to see the raw enthusiasm of rooting for the San Diego Super Padres as Caratini swings and misses now. Oh, sorry, count 0-2. The first pitch was called a strike on the first one inside. I missed the umpire calling it. So 0-2 is the count to Caratini. And the Padres are the team that I've stuck with the fandoms for. And I think it's because I've always rooted for the Padres, even though, like I said, the last 40 years of baseball, they've had the worst record of any franchise. They've been the most mediocre franchise in baseball for an entire decade, just a decade of irrelevance for my entire childhood, formative years, and into my first year of college. Just a decade of terrible baseball for the Padres. And now the Padres get good. It was something we had anticipated because we'd always said, like, we're building for the future. We've got this amazing farm system, and we're getting there slowly but steadily, and we're signing Eric Hosmer. I remember being in class when we signed Manny Machado and just being like, oh, my God, what is happening? Because we had, like, for months been like, you know, we're in the Machado race. We're in the Machado race. Yeah, okay, we're in the Machado race. And then, oh, my God, $300 million, Manny Machado. Wow, that's kind of crazy. And Caratini skies one to left center field. Lo Kane goes over and makes the catch to end the eighth inning tied at 5. So close for the San Diego Padres. So close. But Tatis, Hosmer, and Machado were the three who delivered the hits for the rally, and it's fitting that it's those three, right? Because the winning combination is about getting value at certain positions. That's always the name of the game, is how can you get value at positions? The team that wins every sports championship is the team that gets the most value out of their roster, especially in a salary cap sport. Now, baseball is not technically a salary cap sport, but it's a soft salary cap in baseball. It's a soft salary cap that they play through. And so who can get the most value, right? Fernando Tatis is a great value for the Padres for the next 5 years. Eric Hosmer is getting about market value, and Manny Machado is slightly above market value. Like, he's the man in baseball, maybe, but he's also the third highest paid third baseman in baseball, or second highest paid third baseman in baseball. And you could argue he's second or third best. And so for Manny Machado, he gives you equal value. He's not a problem. But Fernando Tatis gives you a ton of value. Jake Cronenworth gives you a ton of value. And Yu Darvish comes in, and he's expensive, but Denelson Lamet is not expensive at all. And, you know, Chris Paddock is on a rookie contract. So it's that balance, right? It's the young talent that provides value and the star players that prevent you from having a negative at certain positions. Because Tatis and Hosmer – Machado and Hosmer and, you know, to an extent, Yu Darvish and Blake Snell, guys who are getting a lot of money, and they're the highest on the payroll for the Padres and for any team. You can apply this to football, to the NBA, to MLB. Teams that have the most money in these circumstances end up being the teams in situations where they end up being teams in situations where they compete for championships because they have those players providing equal value. And it's not to say that, you know, the 20th best third baseman is getting paid at the 20th most. Yeah, sure, that's all well and good, but it doesn't provide value. Manny Machado provides value because he's really, really good, and he makes your team better, and there's no salary cap restrictions in baseball. So signing a Machado becomes more incentivized, especially if you're willing to dip into certain luxury taxes. And so for Manny Machado and for Eric Hosmer and Yu Darvish and Blake Snell, they don't provide as much value as Fernando Tatis, but almost no one in baseball provides as much value as Fernando Tatis, making like $1 million this year and being an MVP candidate right up there with Ronald Acuna Jr. So nobody's making that level of value, yet still at the same time, Fernando Tatis Jr. is helping the Padres be a contender. And the value that he provides, and by the way, we're back in the game, Luis Urias, the former Padre, is up to bat right now, who still just has never been able to figure out his hitting woes in his career. And so the Padres have this core of guys who are really, really good. They've got six really good hitters. Will Myers, who, by the way, he's right on the list of people getting a lot of money that don't provide value, but they're better than putting Tommy Pham in right field, or they're better than putting Jorge Mateo in right field. Like, it's better to have a player above replacement level who's providing wins above replacement, about like two or three, which is, you know, makes him one of the 20 or so best outfielders in baseball. Let's say 30 best outfielders in baseball, but that's still something that is extremely valuable because the Padres have those six guys in the lineup. They've got Trent Grisham, Jake Cronenworth, Tatis, Machado, Hosmer, and Will Myers. And that core of the lineup, because even regardless of how much you're paying for it, like if someone else could pay less for it, they'll probably win more. But when you get that value, you have to supplement it with those big-time payments. And so Machado, Hosmer, and Tatis altogether is a perfect paradox for how winning baseball is built, is that with the extra value that you get from the young players, use it to buy a Manny Machado and an Eric Hosmer and get these great players in there. It's the Dodger formula, and it's not the Dodger formula, but the Dodgers have used it the best by everyone else, compared to everyone else. That's ultimately how every champion is built, is who can get the most value, and it's always a complement of young players giving extreme value because that's the way that the markets are set up, is that you make less money on the front end, and so you provide extreme value compared to what you're providing to the other team, supplemented with your big-time players who fill needs at a certain price. But if there's no salary cap, it makes it a whole lot easier to do that. Or in the case of the NFL, or the NBA or NHL or whatever, where there is a salary cap, the math changes on the games because you have to reevaluate your position and reevaluate where you stand in the plethora as Urias drives one deep to center field and Profar makes the catch back at the wall. That one was driven. I got scared for a sec. I'm like, now is the time Luis Urias decides to hit a home run. Like he hit one homer in his like year with the Padres and they traded him for Trent Grisham and Zach Davies and he punished that one. But, not quite enough as Jerks and Profar hauled one in right there. That one if it had been hit to any other part of the ballpark, Luis Urias might have been running the bases right there, unfortunately, for the Padres. But now here's JVJ, an even worse hitter than Luis Urias, who's basically given $13 million to play gold glove defense. And it's another interesting factor of roster construction that the Brewers find themselves in. They needed a right fielder. They went out and got JBJ. Knew he couldn't hit, but he plays awesome defense. So we'll see what that ends up being for the Milwaukee Brewers. The Milwaukee. Oh, wow. If he had just hit a homer right as I said that, I would have been so pissed. But he just hit a screaming foul ball down the right field line. And 1-1 is the count to JBJ. So anyways, Padres fandoms. It's a team that I connect to, and We saw this with the Knicks last night. We saw this with the Denver Nuggets and the booing of Carmelo Anthony. Like, fandoms are irrational, and there's a whole sociology behind them that's super interesting. And why do we root for the teams that we root for, and why do we care about the sports that we care about? This is an interesting thing in regards to golf and the WNBA, which we talked about on Monday's podcast after Phil Mickelson walked away with that grandiose title from the U.S. Open, was like, why do we root for the teams that we root for? And why is it that we have this complex sociological, like, why do, like, psychology too, like, why it is that we do the things we do? And in sport, in life, I just love answering that question. Why do we do the things that we do? As the 2-1 pitch is on the way to Jackie Bradley Jr. for strike number two, a swing and a miss from Emilio Pagan. I'm just interested in my own life at, like, why do we do the things that we do? And an interesting case study of that comes from Major League Baseball and why it is that we root for the teams that we root for. And why is it that young people are less interested in baseball? It's not because the game is slow, as Jackie Bradley Jr. grounds the ball to second for out number two for the Padres. It's not that the game is slow. The game's always been slow. It's a little slower now than it used to be, but ultimately, what's the difference of 15 to 20 minutes if all these sporting events are going to be 2.5 to 3 hours? Like, baseball is not dying because baseball is slow. It's a conventional wisdom thing that's easy, straightforward, and pretty wrong and doesn't account for the multers around baseball. Part of it is the homogenization of baseball. Part of it is the fact that football makes things more concerted, and the fact that baseball has every game matter because there's less, and they compact it into one day. They've got this perfect formula of putting everything together in one day. And baseball and basketball, the games just don't matter for a long time. Basketball is the perfect example. I've gotten so deep into playoff basketball over the past few days, and part of the rationale behind that, Knicks back, Utah Jazz, and that situation with Donovan Mitchell that is not getting enough headlines because of how much it looks like Donovan Mitchell hates the Utah Jazz right now, and they might be beefing with the organization as Colton Wong gets the count to 1-1. I kind of forgot Colton Wong was still a Brewer. The 1-1 from Pagan to Wong is strike numero dos, a swing and a miss at 95. Heater from Emilio Pagan. And so in baseball and in basketball, like, the stakes of the games that matter are so intense. A Padres-Dodgers game, so intense. I remember 2018 when the Red Sox and Dodgers played in the World Series. I stayed up all night watching 18 innings of a Red Sox-Dodgers game. It was the latest I'd ever stayed up on a school night till like 12:40 in the morning. And this was like when I was a senior, junior, one of the two. Maybe I was like early senior year. Yeah. Early senior year of high school. I was like, damn, I just stayed up till 1 o'clock and I got to wake up at 5 something tomorrow to go to school, or, 6 something to go to school. And it was so enthralling. And baseball is so enthralling, as the 2-2 on the way to Wong is fouled off. The thing about baseball, and it's honestly, like, fine right now, is that the Padres can go on a 9-game win streak, and I get super excited, but I just kind of, like, pop into a game every now and then. I'm watching the game this afternoon just because I'm sitting down and watching radio. Like, that's a big part of it. It's just the appearance, or the apparent time that I have sitting here is like, yeah, let's sit down, watch a baseball game. Why not? It's rather enthralling, to say the least. And so it's something that's like just a casual activity, and I love it, and I understand why other people don't love it, because we struggle to get invested in the stakes, which there aren't enough of in baseball, and the storylines, and we don't know a lot of the players. It's why Tatis is making everything infinitely more interesting for San Diego, is that San Diego, as a city, can rally around this great team and get invested with all of the stories on the team, whether it be Tatis, or the fact that everyone boos Machado at every stadium he goes to, or the fact that Eric Hosmer is someone that people have loved for the Padres, or Will Myers being the longest tenured Padre as Pagan loses Colton Wong after 1-2 and throws ball 4. everyone can get invested in the lineup. So it's Christian Yelich, the pinch hitter, comes up to bat, and that's never a sight you want to see if you're the San Diego Padres, unless he's on your own team, which was a rumor that I found intriguing from the end of last year. And, you know, the Padres are in such an interesting space and time where it's really interesting to watch the Padres and get invested in the storylines as a fan. But it's not just myself. It's casual baseball fans being attracted to the sport because there are storylines now. There's Padres-Dodgers drawing casual baseball fans in because it's super exciting. And Red Sox fans having a team of ragtag guys that they can get invested in. And the Yankees fans are trying so hard to love this team that keeps falling short in the playoffs every year. You've got Astros. I didn't even mention the Astros-Dodgers series this week. Like, everyone's getting super invested in the booing of the Houston Astros. They're a heel turn that's creating an epic storyline in baseball. Baseball has multiple national storylines now, and that is a huge part of the growth for baseball. The 1-0-2 Yelich drops in for ball two. I would understand wanting to pitch around Christian Yelich at this point. And so there's so many national storylines around baseball that all of a sudden, we were talking to Cam from Daily Sports Dosage, which, by the way, not to tease too much for the few people tuning in, but we've got a podcast coming up with Daily Sports Dosage pretty soon, is this idea that he, as a casual baseball fan, has been super enthralled by baseball this year. And the reason I keep saying behind it, there's so many storylines. There's stakes sometimes. The stakes will come later on in the season as Pagan fires strike one to Christian Yelich. Storylines are super duper enthralling. They are exciting. There's reason to have there's villains in baseball now, and one of them might be the Padres. The Padres are heroes or villains based on who you talk to. The White Sox are fun and interesting. The Astros are very clearly villains. Everyone's hating on the Astros, and even if I don't do it, because I'm kind of evaluating things from like a 12th floor vision, as Yelich pops one up into foul ground 2-2. I don't hate the Astros at all. In fact, I think sign stealing should be legalized with technology because it incentivizes evolution and the fact that we could get headsets for pitchers and catchers to communicate with their guys at home plate, or to communicate with their coaches who are calling the games per se, and create a new role in baseball of basically the caller, shall we say. But for Major League Baseball, that's a whole other thing that we'll get into another time. But baseball is super enthralling because you have storylines and people are getting invested in the athletes and the stories. And at the very least, no for Fernando Tatis represents young flair and Latin flair as Pagan's 2-2 on the way to Yelich. Strike three! The Padres get out of the inning with a strikeout of Christian Yelich, and now they have to face one of the best closers in baseball. You know what? I'll say it. Best closer in baseball, Josh Hader, to try and get the lead back here. But to the point about the Padres and heel turns in baseball, and I'm evaluating this, like I said, from like a 12-story view. Not so much the Padres, because with the Padres, I'm like, I can evaluate this from a fascination standpoint of Tatis being the face of flair and flavor and having murals in San Diego and creating anthems that I wish I could play here but have to play over on the podcast because we have it saved from Rob Stone. Like, the Padres are super, super interesting for that exact reason, that the Padres are a heel turn to some and beloved by others, and they're really good, and baseball has stakes, and it's drawing people in to this baseball season. And that I find to be really, really interesting. So the inning ended over in the Padres game. And with that being said, let's talk about some of the stuff that I thought was interesting. Did anyone see this funny Cubs-Pirates clip that came down in this afternoon? Because I thought it was one of the funniest things. And it also made me think, even though there was no story about, like, oh my goodness, look at this guy who is purposely losing games to get higher draft picks. This is what's wrong with tanking in baseball. No, it's just a dumb play by the Pittsburgh Pirates. But what was fascinating about the play, for those who don't know, so there's runner on second and two outs. And the throw from the third baseman, it's ground ball by Javi Baez. The throw pulls the third baseman off the bag, and the third baseman ends up throwing to first. It pulls him off the bag, and the first baseman ends up grabbing the ball and trying to tag out Javi Baez because the throw pulled him down the first baseline. He was going to go right into Baez. And so Baez turned around, again, with two outs, mind you. There are two outs in the inning. All he has to do is go step on the bag. He starts walking down to tag out Javi Baez because he's already been pulled farther off the base. And so he keeps going and going and going, and Baez backs up to home plate and tries to buy just enough time for the guy from second to come around and score at home plate. Because if he tags him out, shouldn't, under normal circumstances of baseball, if he tags him out and the runner scores, then the run counts. But it doesn't matter because he's running to first base. All you have to do is tag out Javi Baez. But first baseman guy for the Pirates kind of panics and dumps the ball to the catcher, and the run scores. And they don't tag out Baez. Baez is literally like 4 feet off of home plate right now. Like, basically doing a pickle, but he can't go backwards because he's going to get called out. And they toss it to the guy when they just have to tag out Baez and the inning should end. And the run scores. And then Baez turns around and runs to first base because now the second baseman didn't cover first base. Because why would the second baseman cover first base? Like, you just tag him out, the inning's over. And so Baez gets to first, turns and goes to second because they threw the ball away. They threw the ball towards the second baseman, and it got away from him. And had the third baseman not been backing it up, Baez might have been able to go to third. I spent 3 minutes trying to describe this clip, but it's just go watch it yourselves. It's just unbelievable what ended up happening with Javi Baez and the Cubs and the Pirates. And the thing that's fascinating, other than the boneheaded play, is like how things can get blown out of proportion. I was thinking about this because we're planning to have LeGarrette Blount on the podcast. And one of the things I noticed with LeGarrette Blount is that things always got drawn out of proportion a bit because, per se, he punched someone on national television and he got suspended a whole season. But then it was reinstated once everyone kind of calmed down and realized, hey, we're kind of going a little overboard right now. And so it calmed down after the fact, but it was just an embarrassment that got broadcast on national television. And so things get blown out of proportion all the time, and at a certain point, as every, like, industry does and profession does, is Ha-Sung Kim pops out to shortstop for out number one, bringing up Will Myers. What kind of happens in all of these professions is that people kind of go a little nutty at times, and we govern by public relations. It's the same thing I was just talking about the Astros. The Astros scandal was all governed by public relations. And my mind started racing to a point, and whether conventional wisdom or not, my mind was pointing to, like, the Pirates are one of the worst teams in baseball. They stripped down the roster. They are clearly tanking. This is a long, 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 long overhaul for the Pirates. They've sucked for 2 years. They're going to suck for another 5 years. Like, it's a long tear down for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And so I look at that, and I'm like, is this an excuse, per se, to start legislating tanking out of sports? And the point that I would say on that, I don't know if we're ready for, like, radical change in the sports landscape, but if, you know, we're doing a theoretical what-if situation, the only way to remove tanking is to remove incentivizing losing as getting better value. And the way to do that is by opening up a free agent pool for drafting where you sign players with allocated money based on losing. But even that changes the game because the worst teams get the most money. As Will Myers grounds one to short, Adames backhands, kind of flips one up there to Keston Hiura, who catches it on the bounce for out number two of Will Myers, which brings up Tommy Pham for the San Diego Padres. But anyways, to the point I was talking about before with the tanking mantra in baseball, which tanking works in baseball, but it's less effective because the prospects don't come up immediately. But if you're going to suck anyways, and all of the major American sports systems have drafts where it incentivizes, like, the worst opportunity, assuming that we all have access to relatively smart scouting that is better than it's ever been before, at least more precise and consistent than it's ever been before. Is this like a tanking situation? If you're going to suck, there is no incentive to be less sucky if the ultimate goal is to win a championship. Now, this is a very important distinction that I always make. If the ultimate goal is to win a championship, tanking can be an effective strategy as compared to being a team kind of stuck in the middle. You can still turn things around by being stuck in the middle, but you have to get some better luck than everyone else. And the higher up you move, the better your probabilities are, the higher up you move in the draft. As Tommy Pham strikes out on three pitches from a 97-mile-an-hour heater from Josh Hader, got him swinging up in the zone on that one. But if we incentivize the system to quote-unquote, tank a little bit more, well, then it changes up the math on how we do the evaluations, because it's all a probabilities game, according to the Sam Hinkie philosophy that nobody really knows more than anyone else when it comes to the draft evaluations. Some people may get luckier. Some people may have better scouts and data. But ultimately, these are humans making human decisions about the projections of players 5, 6, and 7 years down the road from what they currently are. And so ultimately, his analysis is that everyone has a certain base level of knowledge, but nobody really knows more than anyone else. So a lot of this is a probabilities game. And if the probabilities game works in such a way that incentivizes the top of the draft to get the best players, or at least not the best players, the best chances of getting a best player, because the surest ball where Sam Hinkie's profession is, like, the math changes in sports like baseball and football, where the math can incentivize getting a high number of players and a number of shots at the board. The best way to turn things around is getting the number one pick in a year of a generational talent. That is the way to turn a franchise around. Dallas is doing it with Luka Doncic right now, which we talked about to a large extent on yesterday's episode of the radio show. And they technically got him with the third pick in a trade-up, but getting that generational talent in a draft like that is the way to turn things around. Look at Orlando Magic in the NBA. The Orlando Magic are still riding the wave of Dwight Howard all these years later. Is that Orlando got Dwight Howard, the number one pick, guaranteed a generational talent with the first pick in the 04 draft. And within 5 years, he took the terrible Orlando Magic to the NBA Finals. They traded Dwight Howard for Nikola Vukovic, who was kind of the centerpiece of the teardown. After that first year of tanking, post-Dwight Howard, they ended up with Victor Oladipo, which didn't work out so hot for them, but they ended up also getting Aaron Gordon out of it. Like, no one knows more than anyone else, but, you know, sometimes you're going to pick a Mario Hezonja, and sometimes you're going to pick a Mo Bamba, and sometimes you're going to land a Jonathan Isaac or an Aaron Gordon or a Victor Oladipo or a Sabonis. They traded Sabonis too. That's another thing that they did. But you're going to get some hits and some misses on the boards. And so for the Orlando Magic, they traded Howard for Vukovic. Vukovic was the main piece they got back in the Howard trade as Miguel Diaz comes into the Padres against Lo Kane. And they have still been riding that wave. And now they just traded Vukovic and Fournier and Aaron Gordon all in like 38 minutes. Like, if you're going to do a teardown, do it the way Orlando did it, where they traded everyone in 38 minutes on deadline day. And they're going to try and bounce back that way, where they're going to have the third best odds at the number one pick in this year's lottery with a, 42% chance of landing in the top three and a 56% chance of landing in the top four. And Orlando is going to have, assuming that the Bulls don't land their 8% chance of getting in the top four, a 92% chance of getting a top eight pick. They're going to get the number 8, 9, 10 pick in the draft from the, they're going to get that pick from the Chicago Bulls. And so they're going to try and rebuild through that lottery. They're going to trade Vukovic for two lottery picks in this year's draft. And that is going to be the core of the Orlando Magic rebuild, is those two picks are what they're flipping Vukovic for now, and what they flipped Dwight Howard for was Vukovic, who was about to become the franchise's all-time leading scorer. So you ride the wave of getting a top talent in a draft, and tanking is the best chance to land that number one pick in a draft with a generational talent, and then having the smarts and luck to pick that generational talent, as Lo Kane strikes out from Miguel Diaz for out number one in the bottom of the ninth. And so for the Pittsburgh Pirates, I don't know if there's a generational pick or a generational talent in this year's MLB draft. I know people talk about Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, the star pitchers from Vanderbilt, who are going to be top four picks in the draft. There's a shortstop from Eastlake High School in San Diego, California, which is the best high school team in the state of California, and also beat the shit out of my brother's high school team, but that's another thing. And they've got a shortstop who's going to be a top four pick in the draft. If they say he's going to be a top four pick in the draft, he must be awesome. And I don't know if any of those guys are generational talents, but if you're the Pirates, if you're the Tigers, who, by the way, the Tigers already got what is presumed to be one of those generational talents in Casey Mize, the pitcher from the 2018 draft at the top of that draft. And that's like part of their developmental process is, hey, we got this Casey Mize guy. And we got, Adley Rutschman went to the Baltimore Orioles. I forgot who they got that year in the draft. But you get all these people from your payoff. For the Kansas City Royals, it's supposed to be Bobby Witt Jr. He is the prize that you got for all of your losing seasons in the rebuild. It's this shortstop who's a top 10 prospect who's supposed to be an all-star within 4 years. That is the prize you get for being terrible. And for the Pirates and for Detroit and for Colorado and for in baseball, what's becoming about 8 to 10 teams every year is Willie Adames knocks his fourth hit of the day. Jesus Christ, what a day for him. It's Travis Shaw comes up to pinch hit here in the ninth inning, gets ball one from Miguel Diaz, runner on first, one out. For about 8 to 10 teams, the incentives are to tank. In basketball, it's about 5. In football, there's this fascinating experiment that was done through the numbers that basically every year there's about 6 really good teams, 8 to 10 pretty good teams in the NFL. Then there's about 6 terrible teams, and the rest are kind of like what I call Kirk Cousins 7-9 purgatory or Kirk Cousins 8-8 purgatory. That's where the rest of those teams kind of reside, between 6 and 9 wins. So there's about 6, 8 to 10, another 8 to 10, and then another 6 to 7 terrible teams in the NFL every year is what the numbers suggest. And so for those teams that are bad, it becomes a duel of out-batting the other team. As Shaw pops one up in foul territory, Ha-Sung Kim going over, long run from third base because he was playing a pseudo-shortstop. And Kim makes the catch for out number 2, bringing up Omar Navarez, who we said earlier, good on Narvi for staying in the MLB. He's still just hanging around, having a good career from the White Sox to Tampa Bay and now rolling up to Milwaukee, still just hanging around in the MLB at this point. I think he was on Tampa Bay. I might be wrong about that. But either way, to the point about tanking, there is no reason to not out-bad the other team because your rewards are better probabilities. And all of this is an interesting numbers game that plays itself out across a few years in long rebuilds in the NBA. About getting top picks at the top of the draft as he lines a base hit to right field, but it would have been a base hit if they hadn't put a giant shift on and Jake Cronenworth was standing in the middle of right field exactly where Omar Navarez would hit it. And that tricks me all the time in baseball now. I get tricked so often by the line drive that looks like a base hit but doesn't end up being a base hit. And I thought we were going to get the end of this game here on the Take It Easy radio show, but I don't think we're going to get it within the next 10 minutes here. Kind of unfortunate. We're not going to get the end of the show. By the end of the show, we're not going to get a result on this Padres game. It's unfortunate. Updating some information. So they're at the commercial break here. Again, I hope if you're just tuning in, go watch that Cubs-Pirates video before we have this conversation about tanking. And the math behind tanking. So with that being said, we got about 10 minutes left here, and we're going to go to extra innings. So I don't know if we're going to catch the end of this one here on the Take It Easy radio show. By the way, if you are stopping in here on YouTube, thanks again for stopping in with us here on the radio show / podcast. It is always fun to see it play out. And so we got this fun little story going on here between the San Diego Padres and the Milwaukee Brewers, the best team in baseball, as I would acknowledge, as I did a second ago, like not to just keep rubbing that down over and over again. It's interesting. I love Brandon Jacobs. This is a funny day. Brandon Jacobs wants to come back out of retirement at 38 in the NFL because he says there's no way Tim Tebow's a better athlete than I am. So I love the people who sarcastically take to stuff like that and make it interesting. And do we want to have the typical sports radio debate around Kevin Durant and Trae Young, all that stuff like that, the situations with people throwing stuff? I don't think I want to have the classic sports radio debate today. I don't think that's kind of where my MO is at right now. Maybe next week we'll have a Julio Jones trade also. I almost forgot about that. Maybe we'll come on next week and have some Julio Jones talk because it'll be the first week of June. Gosh, it's already June. That's crazy. But it'll be the first week of June, and the Falcons can trade Julio Jones because of his contract, his salary cap ramifications. By the way, shout out to the lone Padres fan just enjoying a beer down in the afternoon in Milwaukee as Jerkson Profar comes up for the Padres. 1-0 count early on here from Brent Suter. They didn't want to keep throwing haters, so it's Brent Suter coming in for the Milwaukee Brewers. It was a long season, got to save those arms. Profar gets ball number 2 in there as well. Julio Jones is creating content. At least it created content for Undisputed, and now Fox has kind of got their own dilemma on their hand from that weird story this week that we didn't really talk about on the radio or on the podcast, but it was just really fascinating to see that all play out with how Fox and disclosure rules and media and all that stuff is Profar. Rips one to third base, but stabbed by Luis Urias. Fielded, throws on to first, and the meaningless at-bat that doesn't even move over the runner on second. That's a tough break for the Padres. But now up to bat is Jake Cronenworth. So maybe there's a little something in the tank here, as that looked kind of painful from Luis Urias, who fired on the first to Keston Hiura for out number 1. Runner still stuck on second base with this funky extra inning rule as Jake Cronenworth steps up to bat here for the San Diego Padres. Not sure why I made Jake Cronenworth Irish. He just looks white as bleep. So I guess I just wanted to make him Irish for some reason. But yeah, that dude looks like he has not been to the beach in San Diego yet. He's from Michigan, I think, so that's also a part of it. But I mean, that dude is just pale. That is one of the palest dudes I have seen, is my man Jake Cronenworth. So 1-0 count. Cronenworth takes ball numero dos. Suter. Isn't this fun? We had a whole talk show today on the radio show. Isn't that a great way to go about it? And there's all this basketball tonight. By the way, if you do want some more basketball analysis, it's all down over. It's going down all over the Take It Easy podcast and the Take It Easy. Well, yeah, Take It Easy podcast everywhere that you get podcasts. And yesterday's show, if you want a lot of basketball talk, as Cronenworth flies when the left field. Yelich comes in, makes the catch for out number 2. Again, nobody moves over. That is unfortunate, but we got one more chance here with number 23, Fernando Tatis Jr. stepping up to the plate for the San Diego Padres, and they're going to intentionally walk him and bring up Eric Hosmer. That is unfortunate. By the way, that boy Fernando Tatis has a 1.069 OPS, which is absolutely like MVP ridiculous this year. So he is a badass, that Fernando Tatis. So anyways, now it's Eric Hosmer's turn, who, as they're showing the video again, hit a home run earlier on in the game. So let's see if he's got something in the tank here in the last 5 minutes of the Take It Easy radio show for the week of, well, the final week in May, but the week of May 26th and 27th. Let's see in these last 5 minutes if Eric Hosmer's got something in store for us. As ball 1 comes in, 1-0 to Eric Hosmer. 1-0 count, pitch on the way. from Hosmer, or from Suter to Hosmer, ripped down the line, grabbed by Luis Urias, and he tags the bag for out number three. That is unfortunate. So I guess we'll call it here, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for stopping in all throughout the week. If you want to get cool stuff, buy from our merch store. If you're looking for some more content, comical sports memes, Take It Easy podcast, we're having a lively conversation about your favorite non-traditional football rivalries today on the Instagram, so check that out as well. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here all throughout the week. We really appreciate everyone. Thanks again, YouTube, Instagram, and here on the Open Talk Radio 313. Take it easy, everyone.